This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Yeah, there it is! When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
DLC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you've been at the pool all day long, soaking in the heat, putting that, lathering yourself up with that sunblock, and you just want something to relax, put in your ear holes. Well, we're going to be with you for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those fine folks bring this show to you. Their support, their generosity means that we get to make these. And in exchange, they get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a whole bevy of bonus content, including Feeling This, which is coming back for season 3. Alex Solman and Christian Spicer are talking about the feelings behind video games. That's a show for any level of patron. Plus, we've got bonus chats, we've got spoiler talks, and at the second tier of our support levels, we got that Wednesday show. We call it Paid DLC, where Lana Bashinsky joins Christian Spicer and myself every week to talk about the stuff you want to talk about. It gets wacky, it gets weird, it's a ton of fun, the patrons love it, and it's all available at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who's sporting one heck of a nice hat today, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
I'm wearing my downloadable Kanata hat today. It's everybody. What does that DLC stand for? And I tell them every time, downloadable Kanata. Of course, obviously. Hello, everyone. Happy to be here. Did you think the summer of games were over? Well,
not
you're an
yet.
Idiot. It's not.
It's the summer that keeps on summing. We got a lot to get into. Nintendo, of course, had their Nintendo Direct this week, which is, I guess, the caboose on the hype train. This year, that is Summer of Games. And we got some really fun games to talk about that we've been playing. We're going to dig into all of it The great news for you, ladies and gentlemen, is we have an awesome guest to do that with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, woohoo, I'm excited because DLC stands for DeLoreans and Lightning Cars. Because not only is our guest this week the senior executive editor at IGN, he's also a former DeLorean owner and current host of Ride the Lightning, the unofficial Tesla podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Ryan McCaffrey joining us for the first time. Hey, Ryan.
Thank you guys for having me. And I want to start by just saluting the incredible job. You hit the post twice in that intro during that theme music. That is not an easy thing to do. If this were the 80s or 90s and you were at a radio station, your producer would be thrilled with you right now. That was just impeccable timing.
Why,
on that
you.
On that read there on the opening. Thank you guys for having me.
You're very nice of you to say. You know, 553 episodes in, I better be doing it close to right, but I appreciate you saying it. Super excited to have you. Somebody I've wanted to have on the show for a while now, and a big fan of the stuff that you do, and you're all over the place working so hard and have been for a long, long time over at IGN. And I also dig all the car stuff you do. So really excited to have you on the show.
Thank you kindly. Yeah, it's I'm a very, very fortunate person to get to talk about the things that I love for work. Long time with IGN. I just hit 12 years there. And my Tesla podcast, Ride the Lightning, that's a one-man operation. It's just me. I'm also on Patreon. So I encourage all of your listeners to support you guys on Patreon, because that, you know, you're not kidding around. That is how the show gets made. Like,
yep.
I have taken a lot of pride in doing my Tesla podcast every single week for the last, let's see, I just had a palindrome episode. So 464 weeks in a row. So I'm at
nice.
464. And yeah, it's the Patreon folks, the very kind supporters are the ones that enable you to keep it going. So I'm all about that. And I hope maybe by the end of this episode, hopefully we can get some more folks to click over to patreon.com/DLCpod and get you guys a few more backers over there. Cause you're clear. I can tell in the first 3 minutes that you do awesome work here.
Love it. Thank you, Ryan. Very kind of you to say, and wise words, ladies and gentlemen, listen to this man. He knows what he's talking about. Let's jump in and start the show the way we always do, with story of the week.
Story of the week. It's the story of the week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. But you can also send comments, questions, anything you'd like us to hear. We love hearing from you. dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But that's not the only place. Oh, you can also hang out in our Discord, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Lots of great folks hanging out, talking about the show and games and all sorts of other stuff. So swing by, check it out, become part of the community. But Ryan, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I mean, I think it's got to be, it's a coin flip. I will give it to... If we want to literally flip a coin, I don't have one because I'm like, I'm totally contactless with money at this point. But yeah.
Flip a credit card, I guess. Flip Apple Pay. I don't know how to do that.
It's got to be a toss-up between the announcement of a new Zelda game where you play as Zelda or the actual reveal of Metroid Prime 4. I don't think there's any contest. That's what I'm saying. You can flip a coin and go with either one of those, but it's got to be one of those for me.
Indeed. I think you hit the nail on the head. And Nintendo's Direct, their Summer of Games. In fact, hey, it's the last one, so we're going to do the bumper.
It's the Summer of Games on DLC. You're going to get hyped up, then the news will live up to your expectations.
Or will it? Maybe the news this time will live up to your expectations, because, as Ryan mentioned, we got some heavy hitters in this Nintendo Direct. Nintendo saying, hey, not only do we have stuff for the Switch at the end of 2024, we subsequent years, there's going to be more years of Switch content. Not talking about that Switch sequel. No. So, Ryan, I will let you flip the mythical coin in your mind. And where would you like to start with the game Summer Calling, The Legend of Link?
Yeah, well, let's go there, because that's the one that personally excited me the most. I respect the heck out of Metroid, but I love the top-down 2D Zeldas, or 2.5D. I guess I don't know what you'd kind of call these, the newer, like, Link's Awakening remake, but this is the game where, I mean, and it's out in September, a week after my birthday, so it's like a little belated birthday present from Nintendo to me, which I'm thrilled about. And I love that it's not just a clone. It's not just like, well, it's Star Zelda, but she's got a sword and a shield. Like, no.
Right.
No, there's some really cool, unique, and original gameplay mechanics here that I'm over the moon for this. And I love the art style that's going on with it too. There's just everything about it made me completely happy. I'll be honest, I had written off the Switch after Super Mario Brothers Wonder, which I adored last year. I reviewed it for IGN, gave it a 9 out of 10, stand by that certainly. And I thought, okay, I mean, like, mentally I have moved on to the system that I certainly hope. I'd be curious to hear your guys' take on this. I'm out there, I'm one of many campaigning for Super Nintendo Switch, not Switch 2. It's got to be Super Nintendo Switch. But yeah, so a new Zelda game and Metroid, although I'm pretty sure I'm going to be playing Metroid Prime 4 Beyond on my Super Nintendo Switch, but I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, Zelda is at least one last big name hurrah for the original Switch, and I can't wait.
Yes, I mean, I think long overdue to have Zelda herself kind of take front and center in this franchise and get some limelight and get some, you know, playability. And I think you make some great points there that I'll just underscore. One of which is, one of the downsides for me, or perceived downsides of the Switch sort of subsuming both sides of the Nintendo hardware market. When, you know, when Switch, there used to be the sort of Game Boy side, you know, in many
handheld and home console.
Exactly. And now the Switch was both, right? Because it could switch back and forth between two, except for the kinds that we sell you that can't switch. But I was always, you know, I was a little sad thinking, oh, you know, these things that had sort of these franchise prongs, these branches of the franchise that had lived only in the handheld market are going to be kind of superfluous at this point, because it is the main console. And I love that Nintendo is like, no, we still make these what had been traditionally the handheld Zeldas, Minish Caps and,
right,
you know, games like you, Ryan, I really loved. In fact, some of my favorite Zeldas were those Zeldas.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we're at the point too where Nintendo really has to play it this way, because, you know, Nintendo, even with their special Nintendo magic that they've retained all these decades, the reality is it's still taking longer than ever to make the big AAA, you know, genre, advance the genre, push it forward 3D games like a Breath of the Wild, like a Tears of the Kingdom, like a Super Mario Odyssey. So they need these smaller scale, sort of, you know, like you said, they're kind of the old traditional handheld style Zelda, that they need these games to fill in the gaps. Yeah, yeah. Between the, you know, the 6-7 plus years it is between the big game, the real big boys.
Yeah. I do think it's kind of magical, though, that they've found a way to make that type of game and retain some of that genre busting innovation that they found in the last two Zeldas. Because with The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, which is the official title of the game that's coming out September 26th, they showed this really, I think, magical looking mechanic in the game where Zelda herself will be able to create objects, have this palette of objects that she can clone and create in the world and use to solve puzzles in the same way I think Tears of the Kingdom players, Breath of the Wild players were coming up with outside the box emergent gameplay solutions to puzzles and problems. I think this is going to bring that in maybe a slightly simpler way, but I think a no less innovative way to this other kind of Zelda game. And I love that they managed to figure out a way to bring that new feeling in Zelda into this kind of game.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah. Christian, you and I talked a little bit midweek in our little Instagram stories post about how much we were both excited about this. And first of all, you know, awesome to have Zelda as the protagonist, finally. And I think the game, just the footage they showed, it looks like it's going to be really clever, really fun. And as Ryan pointed out, just a kind of a gorgeous aesthetic that they're leveraging for it as well.
And September, as Ryan already mentioned, I think it's important to reiterate, September is soon. You know, it is going to be here before we know it. And I think a lot of us were wondering what the back half of Nintendo's year is or what it's going to be. And this is a big game. I mean, it feels a little weird to be like, oh, well, it's kind of this side story or whatever. To me, I think this is perhaps one of the most important Zelda games of recent memory, because it is providing a protagonist shift. And there are few franchises as big as The Legend of Zelda that pull off a protagonist shift well. Lost Legacy with Uncharted did it, but that was like kind of a little side story. Luigi gets Luigi's Mansion, which are great games, but you know, not their kind of own thing. And this is a different protagonist in a mainline style feeling game, you know, on Nintendo's console that has sold a bazillion of them. And I think this is going to be, has the possibility of being a very big game. And we talk a lot on this show, Jeff, about, you know, what the Minecraft generation is. And I think that this hits on a lot of that also, of using your items in your thing to have creative problems, to solve and build things the way you want to do it. So I am with both of you. I am super high on this game, and I'm finally going to buy a Switch for it. I think this is not.
Well, it's interesting too. You bring up the notion of this protagonist shift, and it's interesting that it's the same year that we got the Princess Peach Showtime game, right? Like, yeah. It seems like Nintendo has made a conscious effort to have these female protagonists, which, bravo to them, long overdue. But these are great characters, beloved characters, Princess Peach and Princess Zelda, both of whom like are given some really interesting things to do in their own games and are not just, you know, Pac-Man with a bow in its hair. You know, it really is a different way to engage in these fantasy worlds. And I think it's awesome. This was the game that I came away from the conference most jazzed about. It really does feel like there's going to be so many fun ways to solve problems. I hope it's not just stack tables to get higher up. I really feel like they're going to have much more interesting problems for me to figure out.
But wait until I stack tables to get higher up and beat the game. Just beat the game. I mean, there's got to be something like that, right? Somebody's going to put together a run and it's like, oh, game's done quick. I beat it in 34 minutes only using tables, you know, like
78 tables.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the sort of social post factor because of the malleability, which Nintendo themselves is like, they said in the direct, like, oh yeah, it's no two player will have exactly the same experience. And yeah, you know, Nintendo games are not necessarily known for having kind of viral potential for gameplay clips, but there will definitely be people doing crazy and unexpected things with this. I guess the Tears of the Kingdom did a great job of that. Showed that off, and so it's not like this hasn't been done before. But you make a great point too, Christian, about I hadn't even really considered the Minecraft generation aspect of it. Like this really will speak to that next generation of Nintendo gamers that sort of expects to be able to use objects to manipulate the world in a way that we didn't grow up with. So that's a solid call out there.
Totally. And it looks like the second half of 2024 is going to be pretty strong. As we've already mentioned, September 26th, this game. And then October, we have, what was in October? There's a couple of things in October, but November, is packed to Mario and Luigi Brothership, which is another game that debuted at the Direct. Is a brand new Super Mario Brothers role-playing game adventure. It looks awesome. I thought the footage for that, you know, it's a game I want to play. I definitely want to play that. Oh, I know what the October game is. New Mario Party, Super Mario Party Jamboree, October 17th. And then right into January with Donkey Kong Country Returns HD. They showed a bunch of, you know, third party and indie games that are coming to Switch as well. Before we get to the other big one, Ryan, are there other of these that you'd like to call out that intrigue you more than others?
You hit most of them. Yeah. I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised by this direct the same reason that a lot of people were, is because I think a lot of us had kind of written off this holiday. It's like, well, the rumor was, and we don't know if it's actually true, but there's plenty of reason to believe that the Super Nintendo Switch was intended to come out this fall and isn't going to happen, for whether it's a hardware production reason or giving first party big games more time, whatever the case may be. But it turns out Nintendo, they had, I guess, what you might call a backup plan. And we are seeing that. Yeah. And maybe it was the primary plan all along. I don't know. But if it is the backup plan, kudos to Nintendo, because this is still, you know, this is almost certainly like 99% going to be the original Switch's last Christmas, as, you know, as the Nintendo system. Not that it will suddenly just die instantly, but it's going to go out with a bang, it looks like.
Indeed. Yeah. Christian, you and I were guessing that we'd see some sort of kind of, you know, limping into the finish line with some sort of HD upgrade or remake of something. And we are getting that. We're getting, you know, as I mentioned, the Donkey Kong Country Returns HD is sort of that.
Luigi's Mansion 2.
That's right. And Dragon's Quest, the Dragon Quest games, 1, 2, and 3 are all getting HD 2D remakes announced.
My favorite new art style of this generation. We need every game that we grew up with to be either remade or like sequels made in HD 2D. It is the greatest thing for 80s and 90s generation gamers. I love it so much.
And they keep finding ways to make it better. It's like, I feel like I'd be like, I've seen that before. It's cool. And then like every time they show a new game with it, I'm like, they've done something with it that it's gorgeous every single time.
And I believe that Square uses Unreal Engine to do it, which is just astounding to me. That, I mean, I'm not a developer. I'm familiar with the sort of general accepted practice that Unreal Engine's fairly flexible. But man, in my opinion, it's its own, even though you wouldn't necessarily point to it as like, look what Unreal Engine can do.
Yeah.
I would point to it as, look what Unreal Engine can do.
My understanding is you just dump your old NES ROMs in it and go bleep, blop, bloop. And
I hit a button.
Yeah. So Christian, we do have those. We do have those remakes, those up-reses, and I think some of them pretty compelling, pretty exciting. I know you're a huge Donkey Kong Country fan, so I'm sure you're excited about that. But we're also getting these other games, Echoes of Wisdom, of course, we talked about, and Mario & Luigi Brothership, I think, looks really strong. What is your feeling about that game in particular?
Marvel versus Capcom Fighting Game Collection. Stop it.
All right.
Stop it. I mean, we can talk about Brothership. I just needed to, we're gonna carve out some time for MVC 2 coming back, baby. Brothership looks fantastic. And it's new, which is, I think, shocking to me and perhaps a lot of people, in the sense that we've been getting these gorgeous, you know, port remake updates of old Mario not Mario RPG, but RPG Mario games, including Mario RPG. And now
Paper
to have
Mario just came out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And by all accounts, great, right? And still play really well. But to have a new Mario and Luigi game, and one that looks very polished. It doesn't look like a cash in. It doesn't look like a quickly made something or other. The animations, I think, are kind of continuing on what Wonder did, where everything seems to have a flourish now, even in this Mario and Luigi kind of more isometric view for when you're going through the map. I think these games are often hysterical. They're easy to play, but more challenging to master. Not hard to master per se, but there's always a depth to them that I think is rewarding if you play with the systems. Usually very fun and engaging turn-based combat that requires a little head scratch. And funny. And so I am stoked for Brothership. I think I was shocked. I was when they started showing it, I thought for sure it was an HD port of some form or fashion. To have this be an all new entry in this franchise, I think is awesome. Very, very cool.
Yeah, and they showed a number of things that I thought were pretty intriguing. That, in particular, a game called MIO Memories in Orbit, which is a really beautiful looking art directed side scroller game, sort of giving me a little bit of name just jumped out of my head. The Moon Studios game.
Ori yeah, and the Ori, World of Wisps, yes. Or Blind Forest.
Yeah, give me some Ori vibes. Some really cool games in here that are all coming to Switch. And I love how Switch is continuing to embrace the indie community and have a place for something like Darkest Dungeon 2 and Stray, which were both showcased in this direct. But you're right, Christian, Marvel versus Capcom Fighting Collection. I know you're super excited about that.
I love this game. I have the mini-cade of Marvel Super Heroes. It also comes with an arcade perfect port, hopefully, of Punisher, which I am the guy who rebought Punisher on Genesis for $80 or so not too long ago. It's the first Marvel Capcom crossover or IP they did, the first Marvel IP that Capcom did. I love those brawlers. And having all of these games in what is hopefully going to be arcade perfect form, people have been chasing this for forever to have these games arcade perfect. X-Men, Marvel versus Capcom, Marvel versus Capcom 2, X-Men Children of the Atom, which I already said, Marvel Super Heroes. These games are incredible. It's my favorite art style, I think, of the pixel art Street Fighter, and also the way they adapted the Marvel characters. If you're new to or a lapsed X-Men fan and coming into it post X-Men 97, a lot of that aesthetic is based off of what these Capcom games did with these characters, kind of the Jim Lee era of characters. And the games are just fun, like really, really, really fun, fast. And I love some of the tweaks they've made in this collection where they're going to have one button specials so you can make the screen light up and be flashy if you're playing by yourself and just have a good time with them. I am stoked. I am buying multiple copies of this, gentleman. Like, I'm going to have a physical. I'm buying it on Steam. And then who knows how late at night it is and how sad I am if whether or not I buy all three versions.
Well, not available on Xbox, strangely. Yeah. But there you go. All right. So that brings us to the other big dog of the presentation. But before we get to Metroid Prime 4, let's take a quick break for a sponsor. This episode of DLC is sponsored by BetterHelp. Christian, this year is going by so fast. We're like halfway through the year. We're more than halfway through the year. What? 2024. It's a blink of an eye.
It's out the door. 2024 is halfway out.
Do you have anything that you are proud of that you accomplished this year that you still want to accomplish this year? Do you have any? Did you set any goals for 2024 now that it's halfway over that you haven't even gotten to yet?
I'm very proud of this show, Jeff. I'm very, very proud of what we've built and what we do. And I do have other goals that I look at a whiteboard, and I still have a lot of them staring me down saying, you haven't done us yet.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I'm managing that, you know?
Well, I think that's what's one of those things that's important. You know, I think one of the things you said to start was, I'm very proud of these things. And I think when life is going fast like that, when you blink and half the year is over, it's important to celebrate your wins, you know, make adjustments for the rest of the year and take stock of the progress that you've made on your achievable goals for the next 6 months. Therapy is one of the things that can be useful for that. And I know I've benefited from therapy in my life. You and I have talked about this before. You also are somebody that has benefited from speaking to somebody about, you know, not just goals, but self-assessment and really putting things into perspective, right?
Big fan. It's amazing what allowing help can do and bring to your life in ways that you might not even anticipate when you're going into it. And I think it's something that far too many of us put off for far too long to stay with the years half gone metaphor.
I agree. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's not just about working through, you know, big, tough moments in life, although it can be that, but therapy can help you take stock of those things in your life, that those progress, those achievable goals. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, Give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire and you get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Take a moment, you know? Visit BetterHelp.com/DLC today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DLC for 10% off your first month. All right, Ryan, as you mentioned, the other big one that everybody was hoping for, we've been waiting years now. Every time a Nintendo Direct happens,
7 years.
Yeah. Are we going to see it? Are they going to finally show it in action? Metroid Prime 4, we had seen the big number 4 before. First time hearing its subtitle, Beyond. Beyond.
I think they stole that from someone over at IGN, I think is what I'm thinking.
Our lawyers are contacting Nintendo. As we speak. Not really. Just for anybody listening, that was sarcasm. Speaking of female protagonists in Nintendo games.
Yes, right.
The original, you know, of course, Samus. But this is going to be really interesting because it appears to be extremely faithful to the original games. And I am curious if it will feel weird to gamers that didn't play the original Metroid Primes, in the sense that my only concern is, like, is this going to feel kind of like dated for newer players? Cause it,
yeah.
I'm sure I'm getting a lot of, like, people are typing up hate comments for me right now. I don't mean that in a dismissive way towards the game. I am saluting Retro here for taking the assignment extremely seriously over the last 7 years and making a proper new Metroid Prime game. And I'm sure it will have some great new innovations and things, but that first reveal seemed to be designed to reassure Metroid Prime existing fans that this thing is, that they are taking the assignment seriously, that, hey, this is for you, everybody. We know what you want, and we're going to give it to you. So I fully expect this to be to be day and date on both the original Switch and the Super Nintendo Switch. And we actually had our friends at Digital Foundry. We had them analyze the footage because it was fair to wonder, well, wait a minute, were we secretly watching the Super Nintendo Switch version? And our friends at Digital Foundry came to the conclusion, in their opinion, their very, very professional opinions, that no, that it probably was the original Switch. So it will only look and run even better on the inevitable new console that I'm sure it's going to launch day and date on as well.
Well, that'll be a very interesting question. If you know, we saw that date of 2025. That was, I think, the biggest downer of what they showed. Although, honestly, Ryan, I'll go farther than you. I'll step right into it and take those emails that you were dodging.
DLC feedback at gmail.com. Yeah. Attention, Jeff.
Yeah, no, you were smartly, Neo from the Matrixing them. And I'm just going to bowl right into them like a dummy. I thought what they showed was too conservative for me. As somebody who is a huge fan of Metroid Prime, loved those games when I played them decades ago in my apartment on my, you know, GameCube. I really was hoping to see what are they bringing to this franchise? What is, we've been waiting so long for this. What is it going to be that's a fresh take on this approach that is kind of bringing some new twist to it? And maybe that's coming. I'm fully prepared to have that be the second time we hear about this game, or, you know, in 2025 when we start hearing more and they ramp up, they start, you know, showing us maybe some new stuff. But for such a long buildup for actually seeing gameplay footage, it looks like Metroid Prime. And I guess that's a good thing.
For better or for worse, right?
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, oh, yeah, you go into a ball and you move through the thing. And I remember doing all that stuff and the way you're shooting and the bad guys you're fighting. It looked, if you had told me that was the first Metroid Prime, I would have been hard pressed to tell you no, of course, until the last enemy is shown, which I think, you know, is kind of a big deal. But I was really hoping that it was going to feel as innovative and pushing forward as some of these other Nintendo franchises have been, as a Mario Wonder or a, you know, Super Mario Odyssey or a Tears of the Kingdom or Breath of the Wild. Like, I wanted that for the Metroid Prime franchise. Like, take it someplace that I did not anticipate, and I didn't see any of that in this reveal.
Yeah, of all the Nintendo franchises, the mainline Mario games have always been my favorite and meant the most to me, in part because, yes, there's some nostalgia. The first video game I ever played was the original Super Mario Brothers on the NES. That's what got me into playing video games as a kid. But to your exact point, Mario games have always, Mario's always reinvented himself. Like, the platformer has been reinvented over and over again by the Nintendo EAD team. So I'm completely with you on that. Like, another good example might be Doom, right? Like, Doom's another franchise very near and dear to my heart. And when this new development team came in, because it's still id Software, but all the old original guys had moved on for the most part. But what did Hugo Martin and the new team there do? They modernized and reinvented it, and we got Doom 2016, Doom Eternal, and now they're taking a big swing again.
Yeah,
with Doom: The Dark Ages. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if it is a full play it safe sequel after all this time, or if we just haven't yet seen the big new mechanics and the big new things that Metroid Prime has to say.
Yeah. Christian, I suspect you might be diverging from our consensus over here. I know you were very excited by what you saw.
I was. I will happily send that email to you, Jeff. Hold on.
I'm just getting emails from Christian now? I don't want that.
While we're recording the show, this feels doubly rude. I loved what they showed. I love Metroid Prime as a franchise. I love Metroid as an IP. I love the Metroid Prime Substack of that franchise. I think Metroid Prime Remastered on Switch is the definitive version of that game, even above and beyond the controller hack version of playing it on PC. I think it's an incredible game that holds up very well today. And I think if folks haven't played it and they go and play Metroid Prime Remastered on Switch right now, it doesn't look dated. I think the visual upgrades they did to that game are incredible. Its art direction that it was originally based on looks incredible. And while it might be a slower playing game than some people are used to from the first person perspective, I think it is as smart as any game that's come out in the past few years. And so if they're continuing that in Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, I think it will probably be one of the best and most inventive games out that year. I mean, 2025 is stacked, but, you know, of around when it comes out. And I think this is Metroid Prime 4, right? This isn't Metroid Beyond. This isn't Metroid, The Dark Ages or something else. This is Metroid Prime 4, then Beyond. We had Metroid Prime 2 Echoes, and then 3 was Corruption, and now 4 Beyond. And each one brought in a new mechanic in there in terms of how it did things. And I fully expect something to be like that in Beyond as well. I think this trailer was what we talked about, Jeff, whenever it was last year or 2 years ago, when they showed the first Fable trailer. It's like, oh, they get the franchise. It has humor. It has adventure. It has this cool art style. And this is, we haven't seen anything since the logo, as Ryan mentioned, in 7 years. This is Nintendo saying, hey, we know you've heard this game has had some development problems. It's in good hands at Retro. They've been taking it very seriously. Metroid Prime fans, you are going to love it. This is for you. And we're going to show you all the cool stuff later, kind of like they did
with
Zelda, right?
That should have been called Metroid Prime for you.
For you. They already did that with Smash Brothers. but they kind of did that with Zelda as well. And showing the first time they showed it, it was very much, this is a sequel of
Yeah.
Breath of the Wild. And it's built on that. And Metroid had Dread last year, which did have a big inventive mechanic of having that chase mechanic that was totally new to a Metroid game, and how that pushed and pulled on the exploration. Some people liked it more than others, but it was Nintendo taking a swing and kind of doing what we had talked about, Ryan had mentioned earlier, of, and Jeff, as you as well, mentioning the handheld Zeldas, of like doing these two different versions of a franchise. So for me, Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, sign me up. They showed me exactly what I wanted to see. I don't want to see necessarily what a twist or gameplay reveal will be yet. And I'm very curious. The biggest thing for me from this reveal and from a few of these, the 2025 dates, is this Nintendo's way of like winking that the Super Nintendo Switch will have backwards compatibility that does that little, you know, little up-resy, little juicy juice.
We've been hearing rumblings of that from leaks here and there that's
HD rumbles too.
Yeah, HD rumbles.
I don't think Nintendo can get away with not doing backwards compatibility anymore. The audience expects it, as they should. We are past that. Like these games need to live on for a million different reasons, for game preservation, for just consumer fair play. Like these should not be locked to an old platform when, like, all of these consoles, even the Switch, they're all just PCs. They're all PCs. So there's no reason for them to not be backwards compatible anymore. You know, we're not talking about the Cell processor in a PS3 anymore. And like, well, emulating that would be weird on the next console. Like, no, they're all PCs. Nintendo needs to do it. I think they will. If they don't, it's going to be like, I'll be at the head of the pitchfork and torch mob if they do not support backwards compatibility. But I think for me, really, the more interesting question, because I think it will absolutely be backwards compatible, is, and I apologize if you guys address this on your Wednesday show, but is Metroid Prime 4 a day one launch title for the Super Nintendo Switch, in your gentleman's fine opinions?
I think that's the question, right? Is it the last two, you know, Breath of the Wild kind of was that, and Twilight Princess, right, was that weird bridge between the generation that was already going strong and the new generation that they were introducing. Is Metroid Prime 4 that? It obviously there's the history there of Nintendo doing it, so that leads me to believe they probably will. And it's a strong enough title that has so much excitement and anticipation built around it. They'd be fools not to launch the new system with that, but also fools not, you know, to launch that game without leveraging the tens of millions of Switches that are waiting, you know, out there in the wild already. So it just makes a lot of sense, which is why I think Nintendo's not doing
it. What do you think, Kristen? And then I'll give you my take on this.
Yeah, my gut is there's going to be, I don't know, they haven't confirmed the chip architecture, so I'm not trying to reveal anything I don't know, but I think there's going to be some NVIDIA or NVIDIA-esque magic in this next Nintendo console that gives old games a boost. Maybe not all old games, but enough of the old games. So I don't think there will be two SKUs of Metroid Prime 4 Beyond. I think they will release one version of it, whatever it is. And then if you play it, you take that same chip or your digital file and you play it on the next Nintendo console, you're going to have more bells and whistles on it. It's going to be prettier, run at a faster frame rate, or something that happens natively, kind of like Xbox did with some of their old games when they brought that over. That's my guess for what they're going to do. And I don't think that will go all the way back to like launch Switch titles necessarily, but I think there's going to be a batch of them. Because I went and looked of home consoles. The only home console Nintendo hasn't released in holiday is the Switch. And so is Super Switch March, or is Metroid Prime 4 Beyond March? And then next Nintendo console, still the traditional November. Their handheld consoles have been released all over the calendar. So, you're kind of just throwing darts here. But that's my guess, is that it gets a native up boost on the next console, but it's the same SKU. Ryan.
Like a DLSS kind of situation?
Yeah, DLS frame gen, something like that, that kind of just kicks it up a notch.
Yeah, for me, I think if it's a day one Super Nintendo Switch launch title, I don't think it'll be the only big one. And the reason I say that is, and now the Metroid fans will come after me, but Metroid Prime is very much, well, Metroid in general is very much the sort of gamer's game, like the real Nintendo gamer's game. It doesn't, it just, look at the numbers. It doesn't have the sales potential that Mario and Zelda do. It just doesn't. It's not Mario Kart. It's not a mainline 3D Mario. It's not a big Zelda game. So,
you know, like it's down there for sure.
Yeah. I think it's not a strong enough game sales wise to launch the new console with. Hmm. So I also, I just got done talking about how much I adore the mainline Mario games because they're always reinventing themselves. The timing is lining up seemingly for the next big 3D Mario game to be the day one launch game. We got Tears of the Kingdom after 6 years, and it's been now we're going to hit 7 in the fall since Super Mario Odyssey. So it seems to me, and maybe it's just wishful thinking, but I think it's going to be the next big 3D Mario game, and maybe it's also Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, or maybe Metroid Prime 4 comes like in that second wave, like 3 months in, especially if the console hits in March. Maybe Mario's the thing that is the meteor impact for day one that makes everybody go buy the new one, and then they drop Metroid Prime 4 in May or June, and those two kind of carry them toward the holiday where they'll inevitably have more stuff, maybe a Mario Kart, something like that.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. And whatever that next Mario 3D Mario is pretty exciting, especially if they're going to leverage a more powerful console to deliver it. I'm curious to, especially with the, you know, we're sort of post Super Mario Brothers movie being this massive hit and seeing those characters in a much more vibrant, pre-rendered version. Like I'm very excited as to what a more powerful console might deliver with a Mario.
In my 12 plus years at IGN, I've only given 2 10 out of 10s. One of them was for Inside, which 100% still stand by that. I think that's maybe the closest thing to an actual perfect video game ever made. Hmm. The other 10 that I gave was in 2017 for Super Mario Odyssey, and I 1000% stand behind that. The end of the New Donk City sequence, I don't know if I've ever smiled more at a bit. Like Nintendo did the Nintendo thing of delivering pure joy straight into your eyes and into your heart. And the rest of the game was amazing too. And so, yeah, I can't wait to see what the next big 3D Mario is, especially since it certainly seems like it's going to be on a more powerful console.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Christian, do you have any predictions you want to lay down as far as where Metroid Prime 4 Beyond lands? I mean, there's certainly a world where Beyond hits before the console. Like the console is November, Beyond is, you know, mid-year somewhere, or vice versa. Like the console could be earlier and it's late, you know, so it really is up in the air at this point. You have any predictions?
No, I mean, they're just guesses, but like Twilight Princess is that, Jeff, like it was a cross-gen title, but it launched first on the next one before the old one came out. Yeah. And they're like, no, it's still coming. If I had to guess based off nothing, I would guess that Prime 4 comes out early next year, and the next Nintendo console comes out after that. I think it comes out after that.
So you guys are both not thinking that Super Nintendo Switch drops in March.
No.
I think we'd have heard more about it in January.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. I think that new console is a late year thing. That's my feeling. But
see, for me, I see no I think March makes a ton of sense because look how well it worked last time. Like the Switch is their most successful console.
Yeah.
Is it ever? Is the original NES still more? But it's.
I mean, I like the Wii.
That's true. Yeah. But it's the Switch has been wildly successful. If you go in March, you get all the hardcore early adopters, us and all of your listeners. We all get our day one orders in. We all try to get it. And if we don't get one day one, we get it, you know, hopefully the next month or the month after. And you get all the diehard folks out of the way first. And then you can roll in to the holiday with more stock, plenty of supply, some more software momentum. I think March makes a ton of sense for them to do again. That is my expectation at this point, but as you've both wisely pointed out, and we all know so well at this point, you can't predict Nintendo when you think they're going to zig, they'll zag. But I think there's plenty of good reason to believe that it will be March again.
Interesting.
And I think they're going to call it the Nintendo Genesis Switch, just to really...
The Nintendo Master System.
Take that, Sega.
All right, Christian. Well, we don't have to belabor our stories of the week too much. I mean, obviously, Nintendo's Direct was a big deal, and we wanted to deep dive into that. But do you have a story of the week that you want to bring up briefly?
It can be very quick, and it's that there's word that there is a sequel to the Uncharted movie. I love the Uncharted franchise. I talked about replaying Uncharted 3 not that long, a couple weeks ago on this show. Our friends at Into the Aether had an awesome bonus episode all about the Uncharted franchise. And I think I was a guest, Jeff, with you and Dave and Devendra on the Filmcast when we talked about the Uncharted movie. I did not love it. Do you know what I do love, though? A comeback story. I love the idea of an Uncharted movie. I think it can be incredible. I don't dislike Tom Holland as Nate. And so I'm hopeful that we get a very good Uncharted 2 movie. And I feel weird to say I'm excited to know that there's a sequel, but I'm optimistic that the sequel can hit it out of the park. How's that?
Yeah, we got confirmation via Variety that Sony is doing the Uncharted sequel. They talked about it at Cine Europe while kind of going down their whole slate of films that are coming in the next couple of years.
Venom 5, Venom 6, Venom 7, Venom 8.
That's all we need. So the first Uncharted movie, and it was a prequel movie, was not... stuff that was covered explicitly in the games. It was kind of new content, you know,
but
new
it took
story
a set
beat.
Piece from every game and put it in the movie.
But it was, you know, it was trying to kind of carve out its own narrative place instead of doing what, for example, the Last of Us television show did, which is retell the story of the games. But that first Uncharted movie did end leading up to, hey, we got to find out about this whole Drake's fortune situation. And so, Ryan, my question to you, not knowing your feelings about that Uncharted movie, do you think this next movie should hew a little closer to the first video game, or should it continue to blaze its own trail?
It can work either way. Following the stories that Naughty Dog writes is, you know, Amy Hennig and Neil Druckmann, it's not a terrible way to go if you are a film writer and the director of that movie. I will say that I have not seen the Uncharted movie, and
wise.
I have not had any interest in watching it, and maybe I'm being unfair, but I'll be honest, the big reason is it's not that I don't love the games are great. I don't buy Tom Holland at all. I think it's just visually it's poor casting. Like it's the opposite of Spider. He is perfect physically for Spider-Man, and he does a great job in the role, but he's built like me. Tom Holland looks like me, just like a skinny, you know, not a big broad-shouldered guy. I don't buy him as Nathan Drake. And you know, maybe I should watch the movie and give him a chance, but I haven't even having it. I'm not sure which streaming service it's on, but assuming it's on one of the ones that I have available to me, I just don't even feel like taking the 2 hours to watch it on a streaming service. It's not that I have an active malice against it. I just don't have any interest in watching it.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I actually came away from it thinking it was better than I expected, which isn't to say it was great.
You also expected to have stepped in dog poop, and you're I only grazed it.
I had a lot of baggage going into that movie, though. You know, one of my best friends was supposed to direct it. So, but the movie isn't terrible, and I think Holland does a serviceable job. I mean, I didn't think the casting of Marky Mark was entirely wise either. The question of what should they do with a sequel, I do think it would be interesting to see the plot of the first Uncharted game as a movie. And I usually don't have this perspective. I'm usually like, let the game be the game and make, you know, carve out your own thing in this world and give me something fresh and new. But
how's
now
that
they,
gone for the Halo TV show, by the way?
Right.
Fair enough. I say that as someone that has watched all of it and does kind of like it, but it's not really gone over well.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I've watched like 2 episodes of that show and I'm peaced out. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. It's rough because like that's what they did with the first Uncharted movie. And I was like, not great. And then you look at something like Last of Us and you go, hey, it worked pretty well when you just kind of did what the video game blueprinted for you. But, you know, but then you have Fallout where it's like, hey, it's fresh and it's interesting. It's really cool and exciting. I don't know. I just think it would be interesting to see them tell that story from the first game and do it with a big budget film. And I'm very curious what the sequel is going to be. I don't know. I didn't know that the movie did well enough to justify a sequel. I guess it did, but it's going to be interesting to see what it does.
I think it made its money. And for me, one of the biggest problems with the movie version is it looked like a lot of stunts by wire. And Uncharted is not Crouching Tiger. Like it just like the jumps looked off. It looked floaty. And Uncharted the game isn't that. It's Indiana Jones, right? Like he's taking beatings. He's not making jumps. And when he does make a jump, it's a jump that a 45-year-old man makes. And so I think if they can bring that to the franchise as they continue to develop it, it will be appreciably better just based on that, by grounding it in all of the movements and less Spider-Man. And more indie.
Yeah. All right. Well, my story of the week briefly is an interesting little tidbit that came out this week about Beyond Good and Evil 2, which, as we mentioned previously on this very podcast, now holds the record for the most delayed AAA game. It was announced way back in 2008.
It beat Duke Nukem Forever?
I believe that's the case. Yes. Wow. I believe that's the case. It took less time for Duke Nukem Forever to be a thing after having been announced than BG&E 2. It's wild to me that the game was announced 5 years after the first Beyond Good and Evil. It felt like longer between that because it's been so long since it was announced. Just a wild thing. Anyway, obviously we didn't see anything about it this summer of games. Ubisoft had their conference, their presentation. Didn't mention it at all again. But interestingly, they did mention it in a post that they put on their blog. It turns out that there is the original Beyond Good and Evil 20th anniversary edition will include a new treasure hunt mission that is supposed to link it to Beyond Good and Evil 2. In fact, in this this post, it said, "Learn more about Jade's childhood and her link to Beyond Good and Evil 2," which, you know, one could perhaps interpret as being marketing overextending itself. But no, Ubisoft actually backed that up and reemphasized the point with Ryan's own IGN, where, quote, the mission reveals more about the narrative link to Beyond Good and Evil 2, showing Ubisoft's enduring commitment to the franchise. The franchise? It's one game. What do you think of this, Ryan? Is it, should we just stop caring? Like, wake me up when we actually get anything new? Or is this something or nothing?
So I have said this on Podcast Unlocked, which is the Xbox podcast I do for IGN. I don't think this game's ever coming out. And I don't say that with malice. I just don't. There's no reason to think it's ever coming out. Why? I'll give you a couple things. One, Michel Ancel retired.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Yeah.
The creator is out.
Right.
He is not coming back. And that's not to say a new generation of developers can't pick up the torch, but so he's out. The first game was an original Xbox and PS2 game. It's not like it sold millions of copies. It's not like it was Splinter Cell or right. a Tom Clancy game, which, by the way, like I'll believe that maybe there's a chance that Beyond Good and Evil 2 will actually come out if this Splinter Cell remake that I really, really want ever actually comes out. But so I hate to phrase it this way because, like, I'm a gamer and I want more games. But if you look at it from the business side, why would Ubisoft continue to put money into this and put it out? Like, do they see this as a big money making franchise down the road? Like, because there's almost no way that this could possibly, assuming it's been in active development for at least the majority of the however many years you said it's been in development.
Almost 15 years.
Like, I don't see how it could possibly recoup its costs. And, like, Ubisoft, if we're being frank, has not, like, they've been struggling a little bit financially. That's all in their public financials. Yeah. Like, they're set up for a pretty darn good year with Assassin's Creed Shadows and Star Wars Outlaws if both those two games deliver on the potential we've seen. But I just don't know why you'd even continue with Beyond Good and Evil 2 if you're Ubisoft. But that setting the business hat, taking that hat off and setting it aside, I still don't believe it's ever coming out. If it does, great. I hope it's an awesome game whenever it finally drops. Like, Duke Nukem Forever, that only got finished basically because Randy Pitchford had the personal connection to it from working on, I don't remember if he worked on the actual core original Duke Nukem 3D or one of the expansions that he got his start as a level designer, but he was in a position where he had a connection to it and he had the money and the kind of power to acquire it and finish it. And it didn't turn out well, but I loved playing Duke Nukem Forever because it was basically like it was playable video game history. Like, there were jokes in it that you could tell were written a decade before. And then there were some jokes that you could tell were, oh, they just wrote this joke. But I mean, Beyond Good and Evil doesn't quite have that kind of developer changing hands, weird baggage, but yeah,
it's one of the weirdest situations I can think of in that it's as you pointed out, it is this like quirky oddball game where you're running around taking photos of things. There's this space explorer taking photos. This is not a commercially viable game then or now.
Right.
But when they talked about a sequel, it was like, oh, we're going to blow this world wide open. It's going to be a completely different kind of game. And it's going to be this massive open worldy crazy thing that the first game just wasn't at all. And that's kind of the thing that made people get excited about the franchise, I think, is this the promise of how much more ambitious this sequel was going to be than its predecessor. And so it's the whole, I think the whole hullabaloo around it is almost vaporware. It's like, it's a wild thing because I enjoyed the first Beyond Good and Evil. I think it's a perfectly fun game. I don't think it holds up particularly well now. I haven't played the 20th anniversary edition, but I suspect it's going to be one of those things like Shenmue where people are like, man, this game was amazing. And they're like, yeah, but we've come a long way since then. And so it's just a wild thing that it's still this kind of question mark. And I think your analysis is spot on. And I just have no idea why Ubisoft is perpetuating it. Like, let it just sort of sail off into the sunset and don't mention it ever again. I don't get it.
I think they could please a lot more people, me included. Like, let's put that, if we're going to bring something back, like, Splinter Cell would be number one for me. But, like, what about Ghost Recon? Remember how huge and fun a franchise that Ghost Recon was? And it's like, disappeared. So, you know, I mean, Rainbow Six has... that was gone for years and has been doing great as basically a game. Yeah, not basically, it is. It's a game as service now with Rainbow Six Siege. But, you know, there's not just a long list of games from Beyond Good and Evil's era that I would rather see brought back. There's a long list of Ubisoft games from the, right. from that era that I would rather see brought back.
Yeah, fair point. Christian BG&E2, like, what are they doing? Why are they like, hey, this is our franchise?
Yeah, I would love if it's just like, and Jade played X Defiant, you know?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I would be very unsurprised if Jade showed up in X Defiant.
That's how they tie it back. Yeah. If you want to learn more, download her hero character pack.
Don't give them any ideas, Christian.
I am surprised that they're keeping to call it 2. Maybe that's before they rebrand it, because Prince of Persia came back in a big way, and it's not, didn't it call it Prince of Persia 7 or, you know, something like that. It's the Lost Crown, I think, was the first one. Now the Rogue Prince of Persia. So I think,
well, and this was always going to be a prequel. Like, even when it was, even in 2008, it was always going to be a prequel.
So I think there's room for Ubisoft to have more franchises, and for them, as much as I would love more Splinter Cell, I think there's room for them to mine some of these less popular franchises and give them a fair shake again. And I imagine that Beyond Good and Evil 2, as Ryan mentioned, person's no longer there, but someone had a heck of a vision for it, you know, and a real passion to get it done. And then it's like, yeah, heck yeah, I'll make this game, because you clearly have a cool idea for it. You clearly have a passion for it. Let's support artists making cool stuff. But now it does seem like that part of it is gone. So maybe someone else at the company is carrying the torch. I'm bad at podcast math, but I think that, like, what, the first one came out in 2003. So if you were 14, then you're 37 now, 35 now, something like that. So it's like, what, who is 2 for? Is it for people that played the first one as like a high schooler, and now they're like us turning to dust? If you're an adult like us when you played the first one, you're dead now for the second one? And or are they making it for high schoolers now? You know, that's the hard part about these lapsed franchises when they do it as like a hard sequel, I think, is that what age group are you trying to bring back to this bus? And I don't know if Ubisoft has an answer, but I love both of this year's Prince of Persia. So I think right now I say sign me up, and I hope I'm proven right.
By the way, I'm so old that when you gave your Prince of Persia example and you mentioned the Lost Crown, I thought you were going to say the Sands of Time from PS2, because that was also the first time it had come back in many, many, many years. Prince of Persia's had a few different lives at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I played Prince of Persia on my XT, IBM XT. I loved it. I played it for hours, jumping over traps.
That remake, the Sands of Time remake, that's now Change Studios. I believe Montreal, Ubisoft Montreal, has taken it over. That makes more sense to me than the continuation of Beyond Good and Evil. Like, Ubisoft's put now 4, 5, maybe even 6 years into this Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake, but like, that is, that bringing that to market makes more sense from both a customer satisfaction standpoint and a sales potential standpoint to me than Beyond Good and Evil does. If Beyond Good and Evil 2 ships one day, I will root like hell for it to be a great game.
So say we all. So say we
Well, they need to give all the people who made stuff for Joseph Gordon-Levitt's company content for Beyond Good and Evil 2. They need to give a game so all those people's content can exist in it, right?
I mean, the craziest thing is record. Like, all of that predates NFTs. It predates AI generation. Like they, it's if that had been announced, like time shifted into those eras, that's what it would have been. It was like as trendy and, you know, on the cusp of the new coolness in 2008 as those things that have sort of had their ebb and flow already happen were in their eras. And it's, I don't know, it's just such a weird project that people are still so excited about. I mean, I get it. The concept art was rad, super rad, great concept art, but I don't know.
Then the ship to ship,
as I'm sure you did, Ryan, I sat in a room and watched him play it in front of me on that hoverboard on the ship. Did you get that E3 demo that year?
I don't think I was in that one. But you know, that's, we've all been in E3 demos for games that never came out.
Yeah.
So we'll see if whether BG&E2 ultimately ends up joining that list or whether it somehow actually comes out.
Yeah.
And all while not a sequel, last thing for me on this, while not a sequel, I think The Last Guardian was my favorite game of the year it came out. And that was another one where it's like, it's not a sequel to any of their other games, but also like not a continuation of that. And it's like, who needs this? It's been through development hell. No one wants it. What is this game going to be? And it blew me away. So I hope Beyond Good and Evil 2 does the same.
Totally a universe where it's great. And I agree with Ryan. Like, let's root for that. Let's root for that. All right. Let's take another quick sponsor, and we'll be back with the games that we have been playing right now. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Green Chef. Christian, I think about as long as we've known each other, you know this about me. I have been all about the meal kits. I love a meal kit. I love cooking at home. I love cooking for my family. We have, at this point, completely switched. There's only one meal kit that I am all about right now, and that's Green Chef, the number one meal kit for clean eating.
It's weird. I just kept hearing you say spicy sriracha tofu with peanut sauce over and over again, and I was like, I agree. That is a delicious recipe. Yes, let's make that. I don't know why I didn't make it tonight. I'm definitely making it tomorrow. And you kept saying it, and I just kept nodding my head. But yes, I agree. Sign me up. It's.
I started talking, and I didn't even realize I had made a Green Chef meal tonight. For my kids. My wife isn't even in town. I made a Green Chef meal for myself and my kids, and it was amazing. It was a pork tenderloin, I think, with
spicy,
like
spicy sriracha tofu.
Not that one.
With peanut. One. It's so it's so good.
I love Green Chef. They deliver you pre-portioned, prepped, quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients. They send you organic, fresh produce, responsibly sourced proteins and chef designed recipes in every box, which are satisfying, nourishing, and convenient. This is an easy way to stick to a clean routine. And I got to tell you, you know, like I said, I have done all the meal kits over the decade plus that I've been doing them. Green Chef is by far my favorite, not just because it contributes to a healthy lifestyle. It's got these easy menu recipes with fresh seasonal salads, grain bowls, food that I feel good serving to myself and my family. But they're delicious. It's so the tastiest. Delicious. I'm all about flavor taste.
Can I tell you my favorite is when my wife is out or working a night shift. And then I'm just like, well, I've got my lunch tomorrow. Like, it's bet. Like, I'm always like, like, oh, sorry, we ate it all. And then I scoop some aside for me and I save that for. She doesn't listen to this. She'll never know I do that.
Hilarious. But if you're worried about finding the recipes you will like, have no fear. Green Chef has over 80 weekly menu and market options to satisfy every taste bud. One of the things I enjoy most is planning ahead. I get on the app couple weeks out and like, ooh, so excited. And then by the time it shows up, I've forgotten what I picked. You know, it's like giving myself a gift in the future. Cause then it shows up at the house. I was like, oh yeah, I was so excited about this recipe, but it was like 2 weeks ago I picked it out and here it is. It's awesome. And you know, they say you are what you eat. So why not eat the best? Green Chef is the number one meal kit for clean eating. They've got variety, quality, and convenience that you want, all the stuff you need. You don't have to go to the store. You don't have to fret about missing that one little ingredient or having too much of one ingredient and then it goes bad in your fridge. This is the way to go. Go to greenchef.com/DLC50 and use code DLC50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. That's greenchef.com/DLC50 and the code DLC50. It gets you 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Incredible. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. All right. Let's talk about the games that we have been playing on a segment we call The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on The Playlist. All right. Ryan, you have obviously been at the Summer of Games for the last couple of weeks and got a lot of stuff going there and playing stuff at home. So I imagine your playlist is pretty long at this point. Where would you like to start?
I've got a few things on here. I'll start with what I'm playing in my personal time, which is something that came out while I was in LA at the Summer Game Fest, and I had to wait to get home to play it, and that was the Night Springs DLC for Alan Wake 2. There are 3 episodes. I've got 1 to go, and I'm told the third one, my Twitter followers are like, the third one's the best one. But the first two, I would say the first one is my favorite. It's hilarious. It's objectively hilarious if you've played Alan Wake 2. So I'm having a good time with that DLC. That I love games that do the kind of, you know, it's not an expansion per se. It's not like a direct continuation. I love when DLC kind of just does something super weird and different. Like, I think we were just talking about Ubisoft and some of the listeners might argue that we were kind of bad-mouthing Ubisoft a bit there. I'll give Ubisoft credit. They arguably maybe get some credit for starting this sort of off-the-wall DLC with Far Cry Blood Dragon, where it was just this completely other, bizarre, like, left turn, and it was great. And that's very much what Night Springs is so far, and I'm having a great time with it.
Christian, I know you you loved it as you have loved Alan Wake 2 and all Remedy things in the last, you know, 10 years or so. So do you concur that episode 3 is your favorite?
Yeah, Ryan, I will echo what your social media followers say. Episode 3 is incredible, and I won't say more than that because I would love for you to experience it yourself. But I agree. I love DLC that takes chances, and I think Night Springs does that in a really big way, especially with the first episode. It's not like, and here's more with Alan, you know. Now we're gonna, if you play the final chapter, the final draft, I thought was a little underwhelming. I thought it answered stuff, or maybe I didn't want things answered, and I could see a world where Night Springs also answered more of those things. And I'm glad they don't. I'm glad they kind of just play in their own world with characters that you know and you get to see more of. And I think it's truly fantastic. And now I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for the next one. I'm spoiled now, right?
Yeah, I agree that, you know, bringing the comparison to Blood Dragon and some of that cool, wacky stuff that has happened before. I would like more games to do that where, you know, the DLC is really just, hey, we've got this engine, we've got these assets, we've got this sort of, you know, structure that works. Let's do something just out of left field and weird. I'm a big fan of that. And obviously this is the company and the franchise that has embraced that more than any other. So that's cool.
Yeah. Alan Wake 2 was my vote for game of the year last year. I adored it so much. And this DLC has been a great reason to jump back in.
What else is on your playlist?
Oh, for me, one of my favorite games heading into the Summer Game Fest Play Days event, and just as much of a favorite coming out, was Replaced. I don't know if you guys have spent a lot of time talking about this. It is an Xbox console exclusive. It was announced at least 3 years ago now, maybe even 4. It's been in Microsoft's showcases once or twice. It's been on Jeff Keighley's stage once or twice. And it is it's absolutely stunning pixel art, very kind of cyberpunk, Blade Runner looking, side-scrolling action game that going in, I thought was going to be kind of almost like an homage to Out of This World or Flashback, or to use a more modern example, like a Limbo or an Inside type.
Yeah.
But playing it revealed it is actually quite a bit deeper than that in an awesome way. Not that those other games are amazing at what they do, but there were three sections to play in the tailored demo that they had. The first section was just a pure story thing. And that was like, all right, I don't really have time to get into this, so let's just check this out. Okay. And then part three was a combat demo, which, hey, the combat's really good. It's basically got Batman Arkham combat, where you've got a normal attack, heavy attack, and a counter. If a guy will approach you, and if a blue icon appears over his head, it means he's about to attack. And if you hit Y in time, you'll counter. And then if it's a red icon, it's unblockable. You got to dodge. Combat feels really good. But the second section that they had was sort of an exploration section. And they drop you into a town where you can wander around, talk to all sorts of NPCs, take different missions and quests from people. You know, some light RPG elements that I just wasn't expecting this game to have. And I just wanted to play. I unfortunately only had a 30-minute appointment, and I did not get a chance to sort of complete all three sections. So I am extremely. I went in really excited about Replaced, and I came out even more so. The only disappointment, if you will, was, I mean, when I had I can little behind the scenes here. You know, I had appointments for all this stuff going in, so I know what I'm going to see. So I thought, okay, Replaced is it Playdays? That means it probably is getting a release date trailer on either Jeff Keighley's showcase or Microsoft, since they seem to have the exclusive on it. And it didn't show up at either of those showcases. And then when I played it, one of the demo representative, without me saying anything, at one point leaned over and said, "Yeah, with the frame rate's a little rough right now. They're working on it," which, hey, that's fine. It's games are work in progress. We don't judge them permanently based on how they're playing in a preview scenario. But the fact that we didn't get that release date trailer after they had previously, I think last year, had said 2024. So no release date at either showcase, plus the rough frame rate. Has me thinking that's probably a 2025 game, which is fine. There are plenty of games in 2024 coming out. We talked about several of them when we were talking about Nintendo.
Yeah.
But sorry, that was a really long-winded spiel, but I'm really, really pumped for Replaced.
Well, it is a very striking game visually. I mean,
yeah, the lighting, the camera work is
incredible.
The camera work is incredible for a 2D game. It's a 2.5D game.
Yeah, it's really the art direction is just beautiful. I'm looking at the Steam page right now, and it's I remember seeing this whenever it was that they first kind of were showing it, I had forgotten about it, frankly, because it's been a while. And like you said, it was a no-show this summer as far as showcase presence, but. Man, I hope it makes this calendar year, because this game looks really cool.
Well, and I do want to just point out, just as a, you know, not that anybody out there is going to get mad about a game not coming out in the year that it said it was, because again, we have so many games, but the developer, Sad Cat Studios, is a Ukrainian developer. So they have had unprecedented circumstances outside their literal front doors to have to contend with while they try to finish this video game. So again, not that anybody was going to get upset anyway, but we want them all to just be safe, be healthy. And when you can get Replaced done, we will all happily play it.
Indeed. Indeed. Okay. So that's Replaced. It's one of the things on Ryan's playlist. What else did you check out at Summer Games Fest?
I'll give you two more. In fact, I guess I'll go to the other arguably higher profile Ukrainian developed game, and that's Stalker 2. I got to play it for the first time. I think it was playable at Gamescom last year, but I did not personally attend Gamescom. I've been looking forward to Stalker 2 for a long time. That's another one. As the Xbox guy at IGN, this is an Xbox console exclusive,
yeah.
Of course, also coming to PC. And I mean, it certainly looks gorgeous, which we already knew. And it plays exactly as you'd hope, which is it is a very gritty survival, no joke kind of shooter in the sense that like the first enemy that rolled up on me, because I'm pretty sure I played from they jumped me in like right at the beginning of the game. Like the first enemy is some mutated thing. And if you take it lightly, like I think it got in a couple shots on me. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Okay, this is not, we're not just warming up with some cannon fodder here.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got an inventory to manage. You've got, you know, you've got to make sure you've got health supplies. It's, again, 30-minute demo. It was probably just coincidentally right next to Replaced at the event. But it's another one that I can't wait to play. This one's is dropping this year, September either 5th or 6th. I don't have it in my notes here, but it's one of those 2 days, beginning of September. And yeah, can't wait to play more because this is going to be a single player AAA narrative first person shooter, and that's exactly my jam.
Yeah, Stalker 2. It looked really great at the conference what they showed. Very dark, of course, but really cool game. What else did you get a chance to get hands on with?
Well, I'll give you one more from Playdays, and that is New World Eternum. Now, I'll caveat this. I'm not a big MMO guy, not because I don't like MMOs, but it's actually the opposite going back to EverQuest, because that's how old I am. I had friends who literally dropped out of college because of EverQuest. Like, it became... So I've always been wary of MMOs because I know I'd enjoy them, and I'm worried that I'd enjoy them, not necessarily to the point where I'd be losing my job or something, but
right.
But I don't want to only play one game. Even if I were right. Loving that game, like I want to be able to enjoy multiple games throughout the year and not just play one game all the time.
Isn't it weird, Ryan, that when we were coming up in video games, that's what you did. And it seems like we still want to play multiple games.
Yeah.
Games want you to only play them.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole industry has just become pick your game and it's infinitely playable.
because it's monetizable. The longer you're in somebody in one developer and publisher's game, it means you're more likely to spend money there, and you're not going to go play somebody else's game and spend and give some other developer or publisher money. Yeah, if your audience doesn't hate me, maybe you have me back some other time because we could have a whole conversation. Yeah. I have this whole like soapbox I'm ready to jump on top of and start yelling about my fear. So I have a 12-year-old daughter, and so I've seen a little bit of this up close. I have this grave concern that, and I know I'm just an old man yelling at a cloud, but you know, maybe I'm among friends here, that mobile games and that sort of, and along with this game as a service mentality where it's kind of reprogrammed young gamers to now expect to only play one game and for kind of the time in the game to be valued more than the quality of the game. I see this in comments all the time where, oh, it's only 6 hours. Like inside today, a game I gave a 10 out of 10 to, it's 3 hours long, came out in 2016. If Inside came out today, the comments would be full of like, oh, it's only 3 hours. F this game. Like,
right.
No, it's just because if a game isn't good just because it gives you 100 hours of content. And believe me, I remember being a poor high school and college student, and yes, it is nice to get some mileage out of a game, but sorry, I have to stop talking, otherwise I'm going to hijack your show for the worst.
I love it. We should definitely reconvene and have the, get off my lawn conversation, because I'm in the same boat. I have a just about to turn 8-year-old, And he and I have been playing a lot of Minecraft Dungeons together.
Yeah.
And it's all awesome. He wants to. And I want the sort of wonderful world of video games to spark his curiosity and have him follow rabbit hole. And he does. He just wants that one thing, and he wants to be complete. And there's enough there. The game wants that from him as well. The game's like, yes, come in. We have enough for you to be here forever.
I mean, that's what Fortnite is, right? Yes. Like that they keep adding like Metallica's in Fortnite, like all this stuff. It's just, of course, publishers just want to keep you in one game. And the industry is learning some hard lessons, like Rocksteady just learned about, like, yeah, you're taking a big risk, and it's there's only so many hours in the day. Right. So if somebody's hooked on one game, your game better be damn amazing to get them to stop playing the game that they're already literally invested in, both time wise and money wise. We're going through, I think, a little bit of a change in the industry, and not that there isn't a space for the kind of games that we grew up with, but I mean, the older I get, the more I like my games like good books, where I want to enjoy them cover to cover, and then I want to be done with it and move on to the next awesome book, awesome game. So,
I've got news for you, Ryan. Check your books. I've been coming in every night, adding more pages.
No!
Some pages not good. You'll be like, this is a bad chapter. But then sometimes I do another chapter that's almost the same retelling as the third chapter that's like really good.
Addendum 37. Yeah. What? How did this get here?
Uh-huh. You thought you finished Animal Farm in high school. Newsflash. They're still farming.
For $4.99 a month, you'll get a new chapter every week, baby.
We were talking. I'll let your audience in for a quick second. We were all talking before we started recording, and I forget how it came up, but I said to much like nodding and thumbs up from you guys, I said, Half-Life Alyx is, in my humble opinion, the best video game created in the last half decade. And that's a game that is very much, 10 to 15 hours and it's over and it's done.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And it's, probably the majority of your audience, or at least let's call them the plurality of your audience, would probably say Elden Ring is the best game of the last 5 years. And they wouldn't be wrong. And part of the reason that they love it is obviously the gameplay, but it's also like a 40, 50, 80, 100 hour game.
Yeah.
And they love that about it. And I respect the heck out of From Software, and Miyazaki's a genius, but give me the Half-Life Alyx 7 days out of the week, please.
Agreed. I can't agree more. That's how I knew this. You'd get along real well here, and I appreciate you being here. All right. So again, we'll have to have you back and we'll commiserate more, but I know you have one other, you wanted to talk about New World Eternum. We kind of got sidetracked.
Yeah.
So this is, you said not an MMO, guys. This is the MMO turned into a single player game, right?
Yeah, you can play it by yourself. The whole thing they've pitched this Eternum. I guess it's, I don't know if it's an expansion or whatever, like sort of a relaunch, whatever it actually is. You can play it by yourself, and I just jumped into it I think it was about a 45 minute demo at the event, and I'll tell you, I had a really good time with it, and I could see like, okay, yeah, I could definitely have fun with this. So that, as somebody that has consciously avoided MMOs, I did like what I played of New World Eternum.
That's cool. Is it basically the same game?
I have no idea, because I never played the original version of it.
No, I mean, I put some solid time into the MMO when it came out, and I thought it had some really interesting,
It had mechanisms. A lot of good word of mouth when it came out. People seemed to really be enjoying the game. So
yeah. One final thing you wanted to mention. Yes?
Oh, yeah. I'll just throw out and definitely an oldie at this point, but my daughter, she played Unravel by herself and then wanted to play Unravel 2 together. And so we've been making our way through that, and that's been, we're almost to the end. We're on like the last section, which I ended up, I think I might have reviewed Unravel 1 for IGN. I didn't, and then I didn't too. I played some of 2, never finished it, so now we're past where I ever got to. And yeah, it's just, it's cool getting, when they're old enough and, you know, you're going through this now, it's,
yeah,
it's cool getting to play games with your kids. It's been a neat part of being a gamer dad.
It's amazing. My son loves being in menus, I'm like, can we play? Can we play a little, or are you just going to be in the menu though? He's constantly comparing his loot. And I'm like, come on, dad doesn't have all the time in the world here, buddy. But it's very fun. I love it. Unravel 2 and all those kind of built for co-op games. Just wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to hit It Takes. She doesn't know that It Takes 2 exists. I'm going to have to recommend that one. I think we'll do that one next.
That is one of in the pantheon of greatest games in the last 10 years as well, I would say. All right, Christian Spicer, your playlist.
So, for reasons I'm not going to get into, it's been a rough week here. we've had a week, and a lot of games last week, so I don't feel too bad saying that this week was kind of a down week for stuff that I've been playing. But what I was looking for was comfort gaming, and not necessarily good gaming, but I just wanted something on my Steam Deck to play and dive into and let my mind kind of just go bleh for a while. And so I jumped back into Gotham Knights. I don't need to say a lot of it. I'm going to mention another game, and then there's potential for discussion around those games. Gotham Knights, I still don't think is a good game. I'm playing it solo, and I'm just kind of crunching through, finishing that game off. I did forget how hard the opening of that game goes, though. Just make that game. The opening of Gotham Knights is so hard. There's this awesome Batman, Ra's al Ghul fight in the Batcave, and Batman pulls Ra's towards him and like impaling himself to get Ra's close enough to hit him. And it's just like, where's that game? Give me that game and have that be the end of whatever that game is, because that is awesome. And then that CGI trailer ends, and then you play Gotham Knights, which is, you know, still has its problems. So Gotham Knights is one. And then the other one, as the Elden Ring DLC has come out, I was like, ooh, that looks really good. And then I remembered, ooh, I never finished Elden Ring, so I could spend money and dive into the DLC. I think I've done enough to do the DLC, but I still had, as Ryan, you mentioned, 100 hours left of content in Elden Ring itself. So I put that back on my Steam Deck and am diving around into it again. And I remain blown away by that game. And I think perhaps the conversation topic, and Jeff, maybe we can put this for another time, or Ryan, when you come back, we can spend time with this as we yell at clouds and grass, which I would love to do because I do it regularly. I love looking at video games and their approach to open world and how they get rid of all of the people who live there. Elden Rings makes the most sense. It's like, this is a damned land. You are wretched, you know, pieces of crap if you're here. And it's like everybody, people that are there are like, I don't want to be here. You're like monsters and demons or whatever. And then Gotham Knights continues the tradition of kind of the Arkham games. And it's like, everybody's inside because thugs are on the loose. And it's like, thugs are on the loose, but there's really only 10 of them every 8 miles. You know, like I think there are that many thugs on the loose in LA at any given time. And we're still out doing stuff. And I wonder when. And the Matrix demo kind of hinted at this, however many years ago that was. And Grand Theft Auto gets close, but we love open world games, but we can't actually make them the world. And so there's always some reason to create the absence of world. And I think between the two, I kind of like the Elden Ring approach, where they just make the world a world where people don't exist, like a hellscape where there's only monsters. But it fascinates me as dive into these two again.
I mean, that's why, I guess, why post-apocalypse is a very setting. But, you know, the other side of your spectrum is basically every Assassin's Creed game, which is like, we're going to show you life in the Renaissance. And usually they do a pretty good job of like making a hustling, bustling city of people. It's very impressive.
I remember when Assassin's Creed first came out, and I was working at Official Xbox Magazine, and we had a little nickname for Assassin's Creed. We called it the shoulder touching simulator, because you're just like moving through the crowd, like grabbing, you know, lightly tagging a shoulder as you kind of move the person aside and move forward.
That's a good call. Those games do have towns that are populated with people, but yeah. I found it funny as I was diving into these two. We don't need to spend a lot of time with them, but so that's all I've.
It's cool that you're going back into Elden Ring. Do you think you're going to stick with it, or are you just kind of dabbling?
I don't know. For our audience, I'm going, I don't think, I miss a lot of Wednesdays in July, unfortunately. We have cool stuff planned. I should have mentioned at the top, Feeling This, season 3 starts in July. So on Fridays, you'll be getting Alex Solman and I every Friday in July. But I'm going to miss some Wednesdays in July. Only one main show, I think. So I have, Elden Ring is back on my deck. And I think if I do finish it, it will be because I'm dealing with stuff and on a Steam Deck. I love that game, though, and it plays well enough on a Steam Deck. I hope to finish it, but no promises.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I'll just mention one game from my playlist. This is indie game. Jeff's indie game of the week, or as I like to call it, Jeff's roguelite of the week. This is the kind of thing that I love, which is... take something that is a weird, different kind of game and plug it into a roguelike. And you know what? It works. It works. This game is called Rack and Slay. Rack and Slay. And as you may have guessed from the rack part, this is what if billiards was a roguelite? And I got to say, I'm here for it. You know, I think... video games from as far back as I remember, probably as far back as you remember, Ryan, there's been billiards video games, you know, the earliest days, varying levels of whether or not that is even a fun thing to do on a computer. But generally speaking, they work the same way, where you line up your shot and you kind of make the cue ball go in another ball. And oftentimes the mechanics of a video game version lets you kind of see the angle. If you hit the ball this way, you're going to see the way the second ball is going to shoot off. It kind of gives you an arrow showing you, and you can like dial it in, you know, slowly move your little angle so that the arrow shifts and you can kind of line up your shot exactly as you'd want it to be. That's exactly what Rack and Slay does. However, it anthropomorphizes the balls. So your cue ball, your, you know, protagonist ball is this spherical character with a face on it. And there's evil, bad red balls all around the table. And there's pockets. It's this, you know, pure top-down perspective. So it's kind of abstracted. It doesn't necessarily look like a billiards table, but there are holes, these giant holes where pockets would be on a billiards table, and sometimes additional ones that are just in the middle of the arena. And your job is to knock the bad guys into the holes, the pockets. You're knocking the billiard balls into the pockets. And when you have done that to all of the bad guys on the screen, you have completed the level and you get to move on. In between levels, you have the roguelite template of selecting a cool new power-up that you add to your ever-increasing rule-breaking power-ups. And you get all kinds of stuff where you get gold that lets you buy things, or you get more powerful shots, or you get, you know, some wacky, really wacky effects that doing something causes. You can make, you know, your first impact explodes, or you hit one ball and then a random other ball gets the same hit in with the same trajectory and direction across the table somewhere else. Lots of really cool, wacky effects that feel like fun rule breaking stuff, the kind of power ups I'm always looking for in a roguelite. And the other thing that differentiates it is that the table, or the arena in this case, also has a bunch of other weird features on it, like spikes and traps and broken boards that'll break and you can fall through, and, you know, kind of fun obstacles, basically, or opportunities, as the case may be, to knock a ball. If you knock a ball into a spike, it impales that ball, and it's just the same as knocking it into a pocket. So you have other options as to how you might dispense with the bad guys on the screen, but also those are potential hazards for you as well. And if you're, you know, just as when you play billiards, if you scratch, if you knock a ball into the pocket, but your cue ball also goes into the pocket, you scratch here doing so, knocking your ball into a pocket, or, you know, ricocheting off something and hitting one of those spikes or traps or whatever, reduces your health. And you have a finite amount of HP on your billiard ball. Get down to zero, your run has ended, game over. You also have a finite number of shots per stage. that you have to eliminate all the bad guys or game over. And you can do certain things to get more shots, et cetera, et cetera. I like this thing. I spent way more time playing Rack and Slay than I thought I would. But it's just, it's kind of got this like combination of Zuma, if you remember that old Xbox Live arcade game that I put lots of hours into, or what's the like Plinko one that was really Peggle. Huge for a while? What is it?
Peggle.
Yes. It's got like those kind of vibes because it's a lot of physics and ricocheting, and I thought I could line it up and oh, I knocked myself into the. So it's got that kind of, you know, very immediate gratification kind of chaos engine thing going on, but also wrapped in some fun, you know, light RPG, roguelite mechanics that give you cool builds that you can really mess with the game and do fun stuff. I like this game a lot. I bought it. It's, you know, not an expensive game. I can't remember. I think it's like $12 or something like that. Indie game. But one, if you're into these kinds of things, well worth a look. It's called Rack and Slay.
I took a look at the Steam page while you were talking, and it's got very positive reviews. So that's, you're not the only one that's digging it. And yeah, it's, I was going to mention Peggle because it kind of reminds it. I mean, you gave a great description, but there's like some Peggle in there.
Yeah.
There's some pinball in there for sure.
Yes.
And there's also some elements when you're talking about like finite number of shots and planning your shots just right. If I may, maybe even a little bit of Burnout Crash Mode where you're trying, you have to figure out exactly where to like launch your car to make sure it's going to ricochet around and kind of cause a chain reaction that causes the most destruction. There's kind of, there's like a little bit of that there too. Yeah. This game looks pretty cool.
It's pretty neat. And honestly, like, you know, the fundamental core skill set of billiards, which is string together a series of moves, is really what the game is. Like, you have to knock the dudes into the holes in a finite number of shots. So like hitting you, you know, knocking that guy into a hole and then getting yourself into a position to have a straight shot to knock the next guy into the pocket. It basically what you do when you're playing pool. And so the fact that they were actually able to kind of represent that, but then tweak it in really interesting ways. I just think it's a clever take. And one I wanted to spotlight on the show.
Is there like a nine ball mode where you have to hit them in a certain order?
I haven't gotten to it.
Okay.
I, you know, it is a progressive, like if you manage to beat, you know, these series of stages, you'll go to the thing. So I haven't gotten super far, and maybe it changes itself up and I haven't seen it yet, but so far I'm really digging what it's showing me. And it's again, great Steam Deck game, just really fun, kind of unwindy, kind of light mental load game, but very fun. All right, that's going to do it for my playlist. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is going to do it for this episode of DLC. Big, huge thanks to Ryan McCaffrey for being with us. Ryan, it's been so much fun chatting with you. We got to do this again.
Likewise. Yeah, it's. I don't even know what time it is, and it doesn't matter because I've just been having a blast talking to you guys.
Oh,
and
awesome.
And yeah, it's always fun to talk video games, and especially when I get fellow champions of things like Half-Life Alyx in the
Indeed.
Room with me. I always appreciate that.
Speaking my language, preaching to the choir. Tell folks so they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff that you do online.
Thank you. Yeah. So if you want to follow all things video games, I, of course, have been I'm one of the barnacles clinging to the side of IGN.com. I've been there for quite a while at this point and very grateful to be able to continue to be there now. For over 12 years, I love it at IGN. I host Podcast Unlocked, our Xbox-focused podcast every week. I'm also on Next Gen Console Watch, which was we'd originally planned it to be a sort of CNN political-style just temporary show in the year 2020 leading up to the console launches, but the show did so well that we just kept it going, and now I don't think it's ever going to end. We're just gonna wrap around till we get to the next generation. But
just
I'm on
like
there
CNN
as well.
Before you,
yeah. And then in my personal time, I'm a big fan. I've always been a car guy ever since I was a little kid, and These days, I have very much, well, not these days, a long time ago, I fell down the Tesla rabbit hole, and I have hosted for the last almost 9 years now a weekly Tesla podcast called Ride the Lightning, the Tesla unofficial podcast. You were kind enough to give me that plug at the beginning. And I kind of recap and analyze everything that goes on in the world of Tesla each week. And believe it or not, there's always an hour of material every week. the podcast is always at least an hour long. And it's a fun time, whether it's the Cybertruck or, you know, what they're doing with autonomous driving and, you know, full self-driving and upcoming models and such. So that's kind of my passion project that I do on the side. So you can, anybody's welcome to Google that if they're interested.
Well, as an OG Model 3 owner, I have enjoyed it many times. So
thank you.
It's really, really cool show. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, I will say that my car podcast, I also do love cars very much, but my car podcast called Steam Powered that Jay Leno and I do, no one listens to anymore because they don't make those cars. Fill it with steam, Jay, is how we start every episode. Man, I love cars so much. Anyone F1 today as we're recording? No, anyone? This show, I can refocus out of it. I almost went into F1 mode, Jeff. I almost did it.
Yeah, I saw it happening. I was going to have to shut this whole thing down.
I'm back. This show, we mentioned it at the top. We do a fun little, twice a week, oftentimes, little YouTube. They're shorts, Instagram. They are reels, I believe they're called. Specific bespoke content that people can find. We are DLC Hype Train on Instagram and Threads and at DLC Pod on YouTube. Because like every great show, you wait until your 11th year to start doing social media posts for it. But that's where those live. People can find that there. And then I write a semi-regular newsletter about video games called Let's Chat Games that folks can find at christianspicer.substack.com. New one coming hopefully this Friday. I know what I want to write about. I just need to find the headspace to sit down and write it. But that is free to subscribe to if folks want to find that there. Jeff, how's your podcast empire going?
Yeah. I don't know if I'd use that word. I do have other shows. If folks are so inclined and want to hear me talk about movies and TV shows, you can hear me talk on the Filmcast.
Go listen to the Summer Wager episode if you haven't yet, because now we're in the summer and it's fun to go back.
It's all crumbling down. It's all crumbling down. Come on, Despicable Me 4. That's all I got to say. You can also hear me talk with Anthony Carboni about weird science stories in a show we call We Have Concerns. And I do the fan-controlled show talking about sports. All of those available wherever you get cool podcasts. So check them out. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Ryan, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Oh, sure. I started watching, I'm late to the party on it, but I started watching Reacher on Prime Video. And the reason that I started watching it is because being born in 1980 meant that I saw some A-Team as a kid. and I saw a Reddit, there was like a Reddit thread, something about the Reacher show. And I don't even know why I clicked into it, but I think it was a clip. Like, oh, this was an interesting clip. So I click into the thread, and someone described the Reacher TV show as the A-Team if all of the A-Team was rolled into one guy.
That's awesome.
And I was like, okay, well, I want to watch that. And it is just like pretty mindless, but in a good way, like, the good guy for sure is going to win. Like there's no, you know, it's I don't know if it's, it might not necessarily win any Emmys for anything, but it's just a fun show. And I ended up binging both seasons. Cause I guess the first season had come out some time ago and the second season was more recent. So, I think that could make somebody's week better if, you know, you just want to kind of get away from the real world and go watch a good guy physically beat up and or shoot a bunch of bad guys, and there's no gray area. It's like there's good guys, bad guys. Good guy will get rid of bad guys.
Love it. Reacher. on Prime Video. Excellent suggestion. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
I will second the Reacher. As I think we maybe talked about. I'm a big Reacher fan. I'm not as big as Jack Reacher, but I am a big fan of Reacher.
Yeah.
Man, those shows are just the second season especially feels more A-teamy because he has more of a team around him. Season one kind of figures things out a little bit. Like season one, there's like full frontal nudity in an episode and they're like, we're streaming. And I'm like, but should you? but it's a good show. And so this will very much tie into what mine was going to be about. It's a little vague, but find your joy and just go pursue it. And how that pertains to me is I had the chance to see The Starting Line play recently. I would say go see The Starting Line play live, but they're only playing a handful of dates and it's hard to do. They were called out in Taylor Swift's new album, The Black Dog is the song, where she said nice things about The Starting Line and a not so nice thing about her ex. But I love The Starting Line. They're old school pop punk, and they had a reunion show where they got Homegrown back together again as well. Homegrown hasn't played together in I think probably 20 years. And watching them on stage just kill it and sound so good and just clearly feel the love of this packed venue, you know, showering the appreciation of what they're doing and then them putting that back out into the world. Just find your joy. And if that's seeing pop punk bands reuniting again or whatever it is, chase it down and I guarantee you it will be worth it. And if you're close to where The Starting Line is playing, go see them because Kenny is incredible, absolutely incredible live. So good.
My parting gift is also musically related. It's a little bit other end of the spectrum. My kids have gotten really into a show called Kiff, K-I-F-F, Kiff on Disney Plus. Yeah, a really smart, fun, goofy show. The anthropomorphized animals and goblins and witches and weird stuff. Very fun. But that's not what I'm talking about. Because each episode, I think every episode, the majority of the episodes, have a musical number. And we have started listening to the soundtrack album in the car as we drive along and singing along. And I got to tell you, I've become enamored with the music from Kiff. In particular, there's one song I wanted to call out. It's called Sweet Compromise, and it is a work of genius. I think it is a perfect musical theater song. And it's a duet between the two main characters in Kiff. They talk about how they want to have compromise, and they're singing a duet about how we go to, you know, the best things come in twos, like socks and then one character says shoes and the other one says sandals. And then the rest of the song is them debating what's better, wearing socks with shoes or socks with sandals. And they come to a sweet compromise at the end. And it's like, it's just so beautifully structured, so well written and funny. And a lot of their songs are really funny. There's another song about like paying, like renting out your heart to someone, and it's all these metaphors about, you know, renting, being a renter, but also it's just very smart, funny music, better than a kid's show warrants, generally speaking. And I've had that experience with the Bluey soundtrack, of course, and now with Kiff. So if you've got kids and you want to turn them on to some music that you won't want to, you know, gouge your own ears out as you're driving along in the car, I recommend Kiff, K-I-F-F, which I will say my Amazon Echo often puts on the newest Kiss album when my kids ask for it. It's Kiff. And they're like, party all night, party every day. Anyway, we got a listener-suggested parting gift. This comes to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes from Richard in Texas. Let me tell you, folks. You need a friend like Richard in Texas. Richard in Texas, let me read what Richard writes. He has got his friends' backs. Richard says, I'd like to suggest a board game my buddy created called Seismic. It's a passion project he's been developing over the past 8 years. Seismic is a fast-paced, dynamic, asymmetrical, tactical sci-fi board game where up to 6 players compete to be the first to build their spaceship to escape a crumbling planet. Players must recruit units, explore their surroundings, wage war against enemies, manage their economy, and obtain the resources necessary to construct their colony ship. All while the terrain on the board is constantly changing. Seismic is exclusively available as a crowdfunding project on GameFound, and the good news is it's already funded and currently unlocking stretch goals. If you'd like to back this project, check out Seismic on GameFound, but don't wait. The campaign ends on June 28th at 10 p.m. Stay rad, Richard in Texas. Now, Richard has emailed me a number of times about this project. He is all in for his buddy's game. It looks really cool. Seismic, C-Y-S-M-I-C, is the game if you want to check it out on GameFound. But I love how Richard has his buddy's back and wants to help get the word out. So we're happy to help any way we can here at DLC. If you'd like to have your parting gift around the show, maybe you've got a friend with a cool project, let us know about it. DLCfeedback@gmail.com. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Ryan McCaffrey and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. If you'd like swag from the show, t-shirts, hats, like the one Christian's wearing right now, head over to store.dlcpod.com. And of course, as we said, the only reason this show gets made is because patrons value it enough to support us financially. Head over to patreon.com/dlcpod to see how you can support the show. Our top tier patrons, our hype train level patrons, well, they become video games. That's right, Christian. We get to tell you about these games, the games that no other video game podcast is willing to talk about. These games that you might think are forgotten, but not by us. I'm telling you about the second to last Jedi. Remember second to last Jedi? Which is a great, by the way, great handle.
I like the second to last to be eliminated, or like second to last, like before the last. Wait, is this just The Force Awakens? Is this a game? Well, there wasn't a game for The Force Awakens, was there?
There must have been. There could not have been.
A Lego one only, I think. But yeah. That doesn't matter. The second to last Jedi was of an era of game when IPs weren't all owned by Disney and things were a little more loosey-goosey. Right. You know, the House of Mouse would not allow this anymore.
Sure, no, of course not.
But back in the days of yore, you could get a second to last Jedi at an arcade any day, and it was always a treat.
I do remember the second to last Jedi. when you would go into the arcade and you only had two quarters left, you knew what you were going to use your last quarter for.
Star Wars Arcade, obviously.
Star Wars Arcade. But I got two quarters in my pocket. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to both have to go into that game. I got to put them in the second to last Jedi. And have a little penultimate fun, as I like to call it.
I mean, it's a way better name than calling something a prequel, you know? Just call it the second to last of the thing. Yeah. I think it makes so much more sense. We need more of this, right? Like, it's kind of the equivalent of the soup du jour on a, like, was it Dumb and Dumber? Yeah. We're like, what's the soup du jour? It's the soup of the day. That sounds delicious. Like, the second to last Jedi, you know exactly what it's going to be. You know, it's the second to last thing you're going to experience. So we need more of those that just are what they are.
I do like the idea of a, you know, the Jedi that knows that they're not that important. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you want that guy, really, is who you want. Me.
Do you remember that? I mean, it's old, so it's rudimentary, but do you remember that scene where like a middle-aged Obi-Wan was standing? There was like a creek of fire. I wouldn't call it like a river, but like there's a little bit of fire between him and this other character. And he yells out to them, "You are also a Jedi. Like, you're but you're not chosen."
I do remember that scene where Darth Vader is, you know, he and Luke have been fighting and the Emperor's there and they're both sequestered in their own little places. And he goes, "Oh, there is another." And Luke is like, "Yeah, obviously, I'm the second to last one."
Classic.
Yeah, all of those, by the way. represented faithfully in the video game, which was extremely fun.
Yeah.
the irony of the video game is that that wasn't what the title was about at all. It was literally it was a game that only lasted 1 second, and you tried to see if you could last as a Jedi.
And I always played it,
Jedi. You're missing the comma.
There was no comma back then. Yeah. And oddly enough, I always played it on one of those arcade cabinets that was just labeled SNK.
Yeah.
And it had like King of Fighter and then like 10 other games that you didn't know what were.
Yeah. 10 other games, Metal Slug, and then Second to Last Jedi. This game's a ripoff. It only lasted a second. Yes, but you lasted, Jedi. Well done.
Jedi.
All right. Well, that's not the only game from the past we need to remember. Another game I think you will remember very, very well, because it really isn't that long ago. Golf Farmer.
Mm.
You remember Golf Farmer?
Kicking off the cozy genre before it was a genre, right? You know, we have so many games now that, like, I talk about Mario Golf Advance that I really love, and Stardew Valley, of course, is this huge hit.
Yeah.
But there was also this game that came out before any of those cozy games came out, and this was actually Golf Farmer, because again, there was a comma and an exclamation point.
Yeah, it was telling the farmer to golf. It was a bunch of quit
farming and go golfing, I think.
Golf Farmer? Yeah, there was no farming at all in the game. Actually, no, there was. You would plant, the thing that's adorable is you would plant a 7-iron and see if it could grow into a 9-iron. Because you were a golf farmer.
I thought it was all the holes you dug up because you're such a bad farmer. You've dug up all these holes to plant seeds, and then when nothing grew, you were like,
you're just hacking away at the soil.
Yeah, I'll just knock some balls into these babies because I got nothing else to do.
So it's just an insult. You're such a golf farmer. Why don't you actually try to be a farmer, golf farmer?
Hey, they say here in California that water is magic, and that's what makes everything grow. And if that's the case, I'm also a golf farmer because I hit all my balls into the water. So I am living this game every time I hit the links.
Well, we appreciate both Second to Last Jedi and Golf Farmer for supporting the show at such a high level. Thank you for letting us talk about your games by becoming Hype Train patrons. If you'd like to become one, and have your name immortalized as a video game retrospective here on the show, head over to patreon.com/DLCpod. All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.